If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hey, Tommy, I've got some breaking news. Toyota is already offering a $5,000 discount or 0% APR financing on their three electric vehicles. Did you know Toyota even had three electric vehicles? In fact, they have four.
Yeah, and this is big news because in today's podcast, we're going to talk about the new Highlander, and we're going to find out, is it really going to sell?
Yeah, that's a good question. So you may be thinking to yourself, what, Toyota has three EVs? And the fact is, yes, they do. They have the BZ, which used to be the BZ4X. They have the new Woodland BZ, which is kind of the off-roady one, which I just drove. And that video will be coming out next week. They have the new CHR, which remember we saw in Plano. Mm-hmm. It's also electric. And then the one that they just unveiled, drums please, is the Highlander. Not the Grand Highlander, but the Highlander, which is going all electric in 2027. And what we'll be discussing besides that today is you also went on a program. What did you go on?
Yeah, so I just drove the new Mazda CX-5, and we're going to talk about tech overload. And what that means in terms of cars, and have we gone too far with technology?
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, we'll answer that question. You can't answer it in the first 30 seconds, or people won't stick around for the next hour.
Oh, no, we haven't gone far enough. We need to have more screens. Maybe we could do another giant screen in the second row, and then, of course, another one in the third row. All right, let's talk about the Highlander. And here's the crazy thing. So I got invited to go to unveiling of the new Highlander, and when I did the video, I was under the assumption that the new Highlander was going to come both as an EV and as a non-EV. So they were going to keep both. And you know why I was under that assumption?
Because the Highlander is one of the best-selling Toyotas. They sell many, many thousands of units. And it kind of would be a dramatic change for them to go all electric. That's what I would think.
Yeah. So they a couple of years ago, they would sell over 200,000 of them. Mm-hmm. Last year they sold 65,000, but Toyota kind of hid the fact that they're getting rid of it. They never actually called it the only way you knew that it was replacing the Highlander, the electric one, was by the fact that it didn't have two letters behind its name. You know what those two are?
EV.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's how excited they were about. That's how they buried that news.
Well,
and the reason, of course, they did that is because there's the Grand Highlander too.
I mean, I think it makes sense, right? You have the Grand Highlander, which is the gasoline / hybrid option for the people that want that, and then it wouldn't make sense to have another gasoline Highlander slightly under the Highlander. That's kind of been the big confusion with the current one. So it makes sense to make the new standard Highlander more differentiated from the Grand Highlander. But I was talking to some people on my program because a couple of our YouTuber friends were
before
on the Mazda
thing. Before we get there.
No, I want to talk about what you just said. I think one of the big mistakes Toyota made with the BZ is they should have just called it the RAV4 or RAV4 EV. Because Highlander is such a strong brand, just like RAV4 is, it makes sense to leverage that.
You don't think BZ4X is a strong brand?
No. That's not so terrible. So they could have called this the BZ8, right? Or the BZ8X.
All right, let's start with the Highlander. Cole, if you could roll the video and show Tommy what the Highlander looks like, if you haven't seen it, I'd like to get your opinion on what you think of the styling.
No, I think they did a good job. I mean, definitely there's a lot of RAV4 on the front end of this. It's got that new corporate headlight design that we're now seeing on the Camry, on the RAV4, and now, of course, on the Highlander. But the best angle is the rear. I think they did a really cool thing with the rear. It's very kind
of
tough.
Well, so, of course, this is going to compete with – there's a good shot of it. It's going to compete with the IONIQ 9 and the EV9. One of the cool things about this is that it doesn't, like, lean into that Defender very boxy look. So it's boxy, but yet it's kind of swept back and very modern. I think they did do a good job with the styling. And I'm kind of getting over everybody copying the Defender and making theirs, you know, a two or three box design. And look, we have real door handles.
Yeah, I mean,
well, not real ones. They're still electric. But
yeah, I was going to say they're not real at all. They're still.
But they're not like the ones you have to push out.
Sure.
They're recessed holes that you can reach into and actually grab onto something.
Did you hear the news that China is thinking about?
Yeah, I heard that.
Outlawing electric door handles.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that is electronically actuated, because people are. Well, dying. There was an old gentleman who actually got stuck in his Tesla and couldn't figure out where the manual release was.
Yes.
And he died in his garage. He was stuck in the thing for like 36 hours. That was a news story that hit a while ago.
Don't you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I don't understand why designers have all gone like and reinvented all this stuff. Not just the, you know, the door handle, but the shifter, which is what I'm looking at right now. I mean, everything got reinvented. You know, now they're putting a light switch into the screen, stuff that just seems very stupid to me.
Yeah, for sure. And I think especially like there's an argument to be made for like an electronic shifter, right? Because you clear up a lot of space in the center console. Yeah,
that's what they say.
For cubbies, for cup holders. I remember when the Ford Fusion went to the rotary shifter.
Hey, you want to open up a lot of space? Three in the tree, Tommy. Three in the tree.
Well, I mean, we're kind of going back to that, right? A lot of companies are going back to
You know
colleges.
What that is, Cole, three in the tree? Oh, I figured Cole wouldn't know. So in the olden days, Cole.
What does that mean? You called out Cole. Poor Cole over here is getting roasted. He doesn't even
I'm not trying to call him out. I'm trying
God,
to
God, Cole, you don't even know what a three on the tree
no,
is.
No, I just asked. I didn't think he knew. Because I think a lot of people don't know that back in the 60s, they would put the shifter over here behind the steering wheel. So it was a lever that you would actually put in gear behind the steering wheel. And so that cleared up a lot of space, even though there was usually in those trucks probably a third seat in the middle. So.
And it was called three because it was a three-speed manual.
Yeah, that column shifter. Yeah,
there's just
yeah,
a, it was yeah, like yeah. a term for it.
Yeah. Sorry. So three in the tree is just a cool kid's way of saying column shifter.
I mean, I think it was cool in 1954, but
bees knees, Tommy. Yeah, it was the bees go. Knees.
Yeah. But no, I mean, like there's real benefits to going to an electronic shifter, right? Because you clear up a lot of space.
And there's real issues like with Hondas where every time you try to like make a three-point turn, you got to hit drive, reverse,
oh, sure.
drive, reverse, drive, yeah, reverse.
Yeah, there's an argument for that. But I'm saying with the electronic door handle, it's not like you're saving room on the door for more cup holder space. I just don't see the benefit of having an electronic door handle.
It's just cool.
Except for...
And designers love cool.
Maybe saving some aerodynamic on the side of the car.
Actually, there was a study, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. So they did a study because one of the reasons that the manufacturers gave to, you know, make the door flush. And, okay, hold on. Let's take a step back. For a long time, customizers, designers have been shaving off door handles. This is not something new, right?
Yeah.
If you look at like the SEMA crowd, mm-hmm. those guys have been shaving door handles forever. But the manufacturers have decided that the reason you do that, especially with an EV, is because it makes the car more aerodynamic. And somebody actually studied it. And the truth is, the number was something like 0.0002%.
Sure.
It was so negligible that it was beyond meaningless.
Yeah.
So you're not saving any aero by not having door handles.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Every little bit counts.
Not 0.0002. It's meaningless. It's like in the scheme of things, you know, it would be like having a mosquito stuck to the side of the car. It was that minuscule
of
a savings.
I remember Nissan was saying by adding those little shark fins on top of the mirrors.
I'm not talking about shark fins.
Yeah, but that's a tiny, tiny little thing. And over the course of the lifetime of the car, they said it could be a meaningful fuel economy savings.
Yeah, you believe them.
Listen, they're smarter than I am, right? They've got that degree in engineering.
All right, so I think it's a good thing. And look, you may be thinking to yourself, and this is interesting, that doesn't affect America, what the Chinese do.
Sure.
So in America, that there's no legislation saying, you know, you have to have a mechanical, non-electronic way of opening the door. But here's the fact. China sells, I want to say, if you can Google this call for me, but I think it's 26 million cars, if you'd be so kind, a year. Mm-hmm. And we only sell, last year, I think we sold 16 million.
Sure.
So the market is bigger than this market. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like California. Whatever happens in China will also happen here in America, because it will be more expensive for manufacturers to build two versions of a door. One with electric door handles and one without them. So the Chinese regulation should, in theory, also filter down to America.
I mean,
not in Chinese cars. Like, Teslas are made in China, right? In American cars.
The stupid thing about the electronic door handle is, even in the cars in the US, you still need a manual override. So in a Tesla, in a Corvette, you've got the button, but you also still have to have a lever in case that button fails, right?
Yeah, so we just leased a new Model Y, and in that one, you've got the button, and then right in front of it, you've got a little handle you can pull up.
But what about the back seat?
I think that's still hidden.
Did you watch my short? I did a whole short on it.
Is it hidden? Is it hidden still in the door like pocket thing?
Yeah,
there?
So yeah. There's the door cubby, and then you lift up on the floor of the door cubby, and there's like an emergency strap you pull.
Yeah, that's not going to be very easily found if the car's on fire, if the house is on fire.
Yeah, well, that's the argument that I think that the critics of electronic door handles are saying. And I'm with those people. I think that they're just so stupid. We have them in our Fiat that my wife and I own, and they're just annoying. I just don't see any benefit for them. Plus, it cheapens the brand, I think, because like Stellantis, they've got the same door handle now on the Fiat. It's on the Jeep Cherokee, and it's like it just looks cheap parts bin crap.
You know what really cheapens the brand? Screens. Screens really cheap in the brand. Now, we can talk about this too. We just bought a 2005 Land Cruiser, and I drove back from the ranch because we're going to take it off-road tomorrow, and I was looking at that screen that's in there with the old Toyota system, and my God, does that date that thing, right?
Yeah.
It is. You can choose four colors, like green, blue, gray, or white. That's it. Mm-hmm. And then you got these giant icons that look like something out of, 20-year-old video game, or maybe a 30-year-old video game. And it just really, the rest of the Land Cruiser looks nice, but the second you look at that screen, the whole thing just looks like, holy cow, is this horrible? And then the other thing about the screen is, you drove it, but I couldn't see it, so you have to crank the brightness all the way up to actually see it in sunlight. And I think what's happening over the, well, this Land Cruiser, just so you know, has 240,000 miles, so I think it's lost some pixels. And I think a lot of the brightness has gone. And that's going to happen to all screens, not just obviously the Land Cruiser screen with older technology, but still, it's going to happen to modern screens as well. And so if you want to cheapen your screen, Mercedes, because in the new S-Class, they went from hyper to super screen.
Sure.
But it's still huge.
Well, does the new Highlander have a big screen? We got to finish our Highlander discussion.
Well, let's show them. Cole, can we go in the interior?
Yeah, it's pretty big. I do still see switches for the climate control.
There's less switches.
And there's a volume knob, so that's...
But look at the HVAC is now on the screen, in the bottom of it.
No, but there's buttons for it. Next to it, I see it. There's a defrost button and then a temperature button.
Yeah.
So that's good.
You gave me one knob and two buttons.
Yeah, but it's better than... So where I was going with this is I just drove the new Mazda CX-5.
Yes.
And Cole, can you pull up an interior of the 26 CX-5? And what they did, look, they got some buttons there. What they did for the CX-5 is they got...
Haptic buttons. Do you see those?
Yeah. But they get rid of all the buttons inside the new CX-5.
Like, Mazda is like a generation behind. And while now manufacturers are starting to get rid of screens and coming back to buttons.
Yes.
Mazda is now going in the deep end in the screen world.
Well, and that's exactly how I felt about the system. So they had this rotary knob system forever.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Well, I hated it. You hated it. But people that own Mazdas actually love it. I mean, I talked to a bunch of Mazda owners on my trip. Zach owned a Mazda. He loved it. Case owned a Mazda. He loved it.
It was ancient.
Yeah, but Mazda people say that you could go through the menus without taking your eyes off the road. That was the benefit. And apparently, I haven't felt this way, but apparently if you've lived with that rotary system, after a few weeks, you come to love it. Yeah. And I've had now every Mazda owner I've talked to say that, so I'm not going to like – question it that much.
Here's a way you can keep your eye on the screen in the Tesla Model Y. Hey, Grok, turn the temperature to 68.
So what they did in the new CX-5 is they've got a Google built-in system with Gemini. And with Gemini, you can do exactly that.
Yeah, so it's basically using AI.
But I hate that.
Okay.
Why do I need to talk to my car? How is saying, hey, Grok, turn the temperature to 68 quicker than just clicking a button to 68, right? I mean, it's almost like a little dystopian. Instead of just being able to control a car, I have to talk to some fake human to control a car. I mean, it's silly. And then what Mazda did too, I actually like a lot of the usability of the screen. I like that it has Google Maps. I think that's great. I like that the screen is pretty high res. It tells you a lot of good information, but they put everything in there. They got rid of all the buttons. Volume, no volume knob. Climate control, no temperature knob, no fan knob. It's all on the screen. It's just too much.
Can you control the vents with your finger?
You can do. Right, that is a good thing.
They went like 98% of the way there.
Yeah, but I think what you said about cheapening the interior is true, because like the CX-5, the new one has this incredible interior. I mean, it's the qualities, the fit and finish, the color palettes are so good.
Well, the reason it cheapens it is if you show that interior again, Cole, it's like there's no design to that screen.
Exactly. It's just a block.
It's just a big square stuck in the middle, right? No designer said, hey, let's somehow incorporate this screen. At least Mercedes does that in the new S-Class, where it's incorporated into the design. So Porsche does that, right? They have this new like curved screen that's like a ski slope. It kind of comes down at you.
Sure.
At least there is some attempt to incorporate the screen into the actual design of the dashboard, into the holistic design of the car. But both the Toyota and the Mazda, it's just a big old iPad stuck onto in the middle of the dashboard.
Right.
And I think that's lazy, and I think it's going to make cars look cheap because it is cheap, but it is lazy.
I mean, the problem is it ages them very quickly.
Yeah.
Because you're turning it from a finely crafted transportation good into a piece of technology. And if like with that 05 Land Cruiser, I mean, within 5 years it's looking old, within 10 years it's looking dated, and within 20 it's almost laughably dated, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So like if you compare that Land Cruiser to my Land Rover, they're both the same year, but my Land Rover doesn't have a screen on it. It uses physical buttons for everything, and it just looks much more fresh and modern, right? It looks like someone really took the time to design the interior instead of relying on a little black square to control everything.
You know how you have the malaise era of cars from the 70s with the fuel crisis?
Sure.
Right? Where all the power was gone and all the fun was sucked out of it. We're going to have the screen era.
For sure.
And we're living through I'm hoping, toward the end of the screen era, but I think a lot of people will, 20 years from now, look back upon this as like one of the worst times for car design.
I mean, did you see that new Ferrari in the... Yeah, the Apple guy said
I actually liked it, yeah.
He said screens are a crappy way to actually interact with the car. And he's right about that. Like, it's not a good way necessarily to interact with the car. But let's bring this back to the Highlander really quick
Let me give you some stats.
Yeah.
What we're trying to figure out is if it'll sell or not. And then I've got an idea. And I have an apology. So I have an idea and I have an apology. And then I have a retraction of the apology. All right. I'm going to do three things. So first, the new Highlander is going to come with a front-wheel drive and a rear-wheel drive. They're basically two models.
No, front-wheel drive and all-wheel drive.
Yeah, sorry, front-wheel drive. Single motor, dual motor.
Yeah.
Let's go with that. And it's going to have a 77 kilowatt-hour battery or a 98 kilowatt-hour battery. Front-wheel drive, 280 miles of range or so. All-wheel drive without the XSC, which is this one, the really fancy one, about 320 miles of range. So it's kind of... where it should be in terms of where modern electric cars are right now,
mm-hmm.
Which is good, not exceptional. Nothing. Toyota's never going to be, the hare. They're always going to be the turtle.
Sure.
But there is one. There's two places where it's lacking, I believe. And I don't want to whinge and whine about it, but that's kind of my job. So the first place is they specifically didn't mention in the press release or during the press presentation what the charging speed is.
Okay.
So that to me suggests that it's not class leading. So I'm guessing it's going to be like the BZ, which is 150 kilowatts.
Yeah.
Which is, when you compare it to like an 800 volt system that like the Ioniq has, it's pretty, it's getting dated.
Sure.
And they what they'll tell you is it'll take 30 minutes to go from 10 to 80%.
Sure.
Right. But that number is kind of meaningless because what's the charger? How many kilowatts is it putting out? You know,
right.
What's the temperature? There's all these other factors. So having a real charging speed is a much better indicator of how good it will do. The other thing it doesn't do, but apparently Google does and Android does for it, is it doesn't do route planning.
Okay.
Which is also bad. It does have NACS, so it does have the North American Charging Standard, which is a Tesla standard.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do route planning. But in order to do effective route planning, you need two things. And I think it does one, but it doesn't do the other, which the Tesla does. So the one that it does, I think, is Google or Apple CarPlay will know the state of the battery. So it does share that. Mm-hmm. So it knows how much battery you have. But it doesn't know the state of the chargers. In other words, it doesn't know, like Tesla does, you know, that there's 10 chargers and that
sure.
two of them are occupied, or that one is down, or how many kilowatt hours they're putting out.
Kilowatts.
Yeah. So it knows half of the thing. And I think if you're going to build a 3-row family haul and road tripping, in my mind, car, it should have route planning built in. Without having to, you know, go to like these Band-Aids.
Yeah, I agree that it should have it. But I do wonder in the real world how many people are going to care about that.
I think if you're going to take your family across country, are you going to care about that?
Yeah, but I just don't know if people are going to use this vehicle for that. I think if they're planning on road tripping, they're going to go buy a Grand Highlander. Because
So the Grand Highlander will come in two flavors. It'll come in a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
And it will come in a regular ICE, not hybrid.
Yeah.
So they'll have an electric Highlander and a gas and hybrid Grand Highlander, which also has 3 rows.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conversation though, because like I've been talking to a bunch of EV owners and I run into on my travels, and everything from like e-Golfs to Rivians to Teslas, and I've been talking to these folks like, how often are you DC fast charging them? And of probably the 10 or 12 conversations I've had in the last 2 weeks, not a single one has ever used a DC fast charger. I just think that people that are buying these EVs in modern day, from my tiny, tiny poll that I've been running, typically live in a house, typically have home charging, and a lot of the times have other cars that they would rather road trip in. Like it seems like most of these EVs are a lot of people's second or third cars. So like when I asked this one guy, I'm like, how fast does your Rivian R1T charge at a DC charger? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, do you care? He's like, no, because I wouldn't road trip
it. All right, so I'm sure that is somewhat true, but when we bought the ID Buzz, mm-hmm. one of the reasons, besides the fact that Steve was great over at Volkswagen of Reading, was that we wanted to road trip it because that is the quintessential road trip
yes,
machine.
Yes, for sure.
And three-row yeah. SUVs are that. So yeah, if you have a RAV4 EV, if there were such a thing, Tesla Model Y, you may or may not road trip it, but these 3 rows tend to be the main family hauling vehicle, right? You're talking.
Sure,
it's
I
not
get
like
that.
You have a Miata yeah. as your main driver, and then you know that's the one you're going to take cross
right.
country. This is going to be your main driver, and so I think this is especially important that it needs to be able to do route planning for road tripping. That's my guess. I could
no,
be wrong.
I mean, you could be right about that for sure. I appreciate that opinion, but I just think like certainly that. One time a year you would need the road tripping. It's going to be a real pain in the ass. But for most people just taking their kids to school, like if you have a place to charge it at home, you're not going to be route planning to the school, right?
So here's my question, okay? You know, Toyota was late, dare I say last, to the EV game. And now they're going to have 4. Within a year, they're going to be 4 of them. They went
sure.
from 1 to 4 like that, while everybody else is cutting EVs.
Yep.
Is that because Toyota is very slow in developing, and so they came to the game late, or is that because Toyota knows something that other manufacturers don't know? So what I mean by that is every other manufacturer is pulling back from EVs, and now to quadruple or triple the number of EVs you have is pretty bold. So is that because the product planning took so long that it took them a long time to get to 2026 with the EVs? Or is it because, you know, they've got their eye on a magic ball and they're looking at it and they're saying, you know, maybe EVs are going to become popular or are going to become more popular? Or is it because they need a car that – so this car is going to be built, the new Highlander, both I'm guessing – we asked this question, but certainly for – it's going to be built in Kentucky.
Okay.
And the batteries are also going to be built here.
Sure.
So both batteries and vehicle are going to be built here, but Toyota's a global company. So the question, of course, was, is it going to export this to Europe, or is it going to get exported to Asia or wherever? And that answer was not forthcoming, so I don't know. But usually when Toyota plans something, they make sure that it's available for sale in the entire world. So one of the things that could be happening is that Toyota may feel that even though they're going to be building it in America, this will be a world car and it'll get sold everywhere else, so it's worth continuing with it. But
I don't think that's true. I mean, Toyota does a lot of cars for the U.S. market.
No, when they do that, they try to build cars that they can sell around the world. Yep. I mean, think of the most popular cars, Corolla.
Tacoma, only sold in North America.
Right, not the trucks, cars.
Highlander, only sold in North America, I think.
Mostly the biggest selling cars, Camry around the world.
Yeah, but
Corolla,
Grand Highlander
the world.
Is one
RAV,
of their...
RAV4, same thing.
Grand Highlander is one of their biggest cars, period.
I'm just telling you. US, I'm just telling least. You what the journalist said, and I agree with him. You're welcome to disagree.
Like, do they even sell a Highlander in Europe? I'm not sure if you can buy a Highlander in Europe.
I don't know, but I do know that like Europeans lead America in coffee and bread. In
sure.
other words, you know, they have all, you know, when I first came here, we had two kinds of coffee and that was decaf and regular. Now you can get, you know, the European kind.
Yeah.
But we lead the world kind of in the kind of cars, or we used to at least until China came along. And so, yes, big three-row SUVs or crossovers were not a thing, but I think they are going to become a thing in Europe. And so maybe that's what Toyota's looking at. Anyway, that sidetracks the whole thing. The question is, does Toyota know something that the rest of the manufacturing world does not know, or did they just come to it late and they're kind of stuck with it because now they got too far down the road and they had to unveil these three cars?
I mean, it does seem like they're going to be selling this thing in a headwind, especially because, you know, since the current administration has gotten rid of the tax credit, right? A lot of states are sunsetting their tax credits. That was a big driver of EV sales. You know, and that's not going to be an option for Grand Highlander buyers.
Hey, Cole, can you Google how many BZ4Xs were sold? Because
I think it was 30-something thousand. We were talking about this yesterday at dinner, actually.
Yeah, so here's the crazy thing, right? That car was at least one, I'm going to say two generations behind.
Oh, here you go. A staggering 95.6% drop year over year. It's not good news. Let's see.
No, I just want to see how many were sold.
12,000. In 2025, 12,000.
Which is amazing.
And that was year to date. When was this article written? Scroll up, Cole. October. So they sold 12,000 through October.
Which is amazing because that car, you know, would be the last car on my list because it was at least one, maybe not, if not two generations older than anything else out there.
Yeah, but
and its charging speed and its range. Everything about it was just old tech, really old tech. And yet they still managed to sell 12,000.
Yeah, but for Toyota, that's like Lotus selling one car.
But I'm saying,
I mean, 12,000 is such a drop in the bucket.
What I'm saying is that Toyota, because they're Toyota, has this ability to sell cars that other manufacturers may not have because people will buy them. Let me put that in other words. Let's say you want your first electric car.
Yeah.
And you know nothing about Tesla and you know nothing about any. What's the first brand you're going to look at?
Probably.
If you're like 60 years.
If you're looking for an electric car?
Yeah. What's the first brand?
I don't think people know Toyota makes electric cars.
I'm just saying you're probably going to make an electric vehicle. I have to take this. Can you keep talking for a second?
Right yeah. This, I mean, this is important. What I think is going to be the key to the Highlander sales is going to be the pricing. Because I do think actually the specs, while not best in class, are fairly competitive. I think that the design is really good. I think that the interior direction they went with is pretty good, and it's not a very offensive or polarizing car in any direction. So I think for me, let's think about the pricing. If you could get about 300 miles of range for $55,000 and have it be a fairly well-equipped car with all the Toyota safety sense stuff, I actually do think that there's a potential to be a pretty big seller. But the pricing is going to be what makes or breaks this car in my book. Going to the Patreon... By the way, if you are interested in supporting the podcast, patreon.com/TFLCar. We've got all the stuff over there. But you can also comment live on these podcasts, and I'll do the best to read them. So Trey asks a really good question. I'd be curious what you think is the worst car feature that is controlled by a screen. Ooh, that is a good question. So basically what Trey is saying here is there's been a ton of features now that are being integrated into screens rather than having physical controls. And he gives his example that the Rivian air vent has to be up there. That is definitely up there. For me, I think it's probably headlights. I think anytime you integrate major safety features into a screen, it's never good because they're harder to access and there's always a potential for a glitch or failure. So that's going to be me. We're answering Trey's question here, Dan. What do you think is the worst car feature that is controlled by a screen? He said the vents in the Rivian.
Oh, yeah, the vents by far.
Yeah, that's a really good one, though,
also
Trey.
In the Nautilus.
I also think gear shift should never be on a screen. Like, I know your Model Y has it.
Yeah, so the Model Y has it, but they've got this, I don't know if it's AI or if it's just...
Smart gear shift,
where it uses its sensors, and if it sees that you're parked in front of a wall, it knows that you're not going to go into drive, and so it puts you in reverse automatically. And I had that feature turned off in the Model Y, and I just turned it on because I really like it.
Oh, good, okay.
Yeah,
so it works pretty well.
Yeah, so it does tend to work pretty well. I think... the other really stupid thing that I don't understand while we're talking about technology is why GM is getting rid of CarPlay.
That is very dumb.
I think that Toyota tried that, and being the world's largest car company, it didn't work. So
Who tried that?
Toyota.
When did they do that?
They were the last to go to CarPlay. They were just slow
to adopt?
Not just slow. They specifically didn't want it. And so they were the last of the major manufacturers to actually implement it because – not because they wanted to, but because they had to, because there was so much pent-up consumer demand for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of a deal-breaker for a lot of purchasers of GM cars is the fact that there's no CarPlay. That's just really, really stupid.
There's just, you know, I take the dog for a walk in the morning. I listen to my podcast. I get in the car. It just, you know, takes off where I left it when I was walking the dog. The car podcast, not the dog. And it's really sweet and it's easy to use. And I've got, you know, Waze as part of that as well, which tells me where the cops are, which I like. And it tells me, you know, how to get somewhere quickly. And so it's becoming the thing in a car, if I'm being completely honest, which I always am, that I look for the most.
4x4 Enthusiast says, I agree, headlights would be terrible and lockers on the Ranger Raptor. Yeah, that's one too that's a little bit kind of mind-blowing that they have such a major off-road control in there. I mean, ultimately, the reason they do that is it's cheaper, right? It's cheaper. You can move switches. You can put them in different places. You can make them bigger and larger on the screen versus having to actually engineer in a physical control into the dash that you got to cut a hole. You got to build the switch. You got to build the wiring, right? It's just cheaper to put it in a screen.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We were living in a really weird time, and maybe because I wasn't doing this 30 years ago, but I don't believe I've ever lived through a time where the manufacturers are doing so many things that that consumers hate. Specifically, not just dislike, but hate. I don't think you have to take a poll to figure out that most consumers hate having the vent controls in the screen.
Sure.
Or that they don't like electronic door handles.
Right.
And yet this is yet the and even after like 10 years of this, because Tesla pioneered a lot of this stuff, and so a lot of people specifically won't buy Teslas because of it or are extremely turned off by it, and yet all the other manufacturers are adopting it. It's like they're completely tone deaf to the things that people are asking for.
Mm-hmm.
It's very odd. It's a very odd time
we're living in. Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's not only are they creating features that people are not asking for and don't want, but then they're charging more for them, it's a real head scratcher.
Yeah.
Sure. And I think that's why people are excited about companies like Slate.
Yeah, I was going to go there. We're on the same wavelength. So I don't think people are excited by a two-door compact truck. I think they're excited by the fact that this is actually something that is easy to use and doesn't have a plethora of all kinds of technology that is hard to decipher, hard to use, and unwanted.
The problem with the Slate is actually the same problem with the Grenadier, which is something that I think does not get talked about nearly enough, and that's the spouse factor. So, for example, like I would love a Slate. I think that they're really cool. I love two-door trucks. But then you got to run it past, you know, my wife, and she would say, well, where are we going to put stuff in the backseat? And there's no backseat, right? Same thing with like a Grenadier. I love a Grenadier, and then it goes yanking you out of your lane because the lane keep is now brake assisted.
But Mercedes is the same thing.
Yeah. So I think that like the problem with what Slate has done with that two-door truck thing is it's the truck everyone says they want, but then you look at the cold hard data, no one buys single cab trucks, right? That's why they're going away. Is there's a reason you can't buy a single cab mid-sized truck, and it's not because people love them, it's because people weren't buying them, right? So the manufacturer's like, why are we putting all this investment in single cab mid-sizers if people aren't buying them?
I have a soapbox I'm going to get up on for a sec.
Oh no.
If you don't mind. But I've seen this play before, And I think I know where this is going to end. So what ends up happening is, and I think I saw this with Rivian when they first came out, and I think I'm seeing it with Slate. There is this belief in maybe Silicon Valley, outside of the usual places like Detroit, where you know a lot of cars are built, or Tokyo, that there is this pool of buyers that is itching for a small truck or an electric truck that lives outside of the pool of truck buyers.
Sure.
So let me give you a metaphor, right? Mm-hmm. There's this giant pond full of trout.
Okay.
Right? And you have a friend, his name is Ford, and he goes in there and he pulls out 600,000 trout every year.
Okay.
And then you have another friend, and his name is General Motors. Let's call him Chevy. All right? Chevy.
Or Durant.
Yes. And he goes and pulls out, like, when you combine, you know, him and his buddy GMC, they pull out like 800,000 trucks trout out of that pond. And yet, here comes Slate and here comes Rivian, and they're like, you know what? We're going to go to this pond over here. We think that this pond, which normally has sunfish in it, in other words, cars, has a whole bunch of trout that are hiding in there, and we're going to go pull out trout out of this pond. And the reason I know that is because I'm going to be a little little TFL-y now. You know, we are the biggest truck channel, or Andre runs the biggest truck channel on YouTube. And so I think we're very close to the truck world. And yet when Slate decided to, you know, do its first public introduction, they didn't invite us. When they did their first video, they took it to Jay Leno.
Well, yeah, because he's Jay Leno.
But Jay Leno, how many truck buyers are actually watching Jay Leno?
The problem is,
I get who I understand who Jay Leno is.
I mean, he's a pretty big deal, Jay Leno.
Yes.
Know? He's a pretty big name. He's a household name. So yeah, it makes sense why they would go to Jay Leno. The problem that what you're saying is that they're trying to appeal to non-truck buyers.
Yes, they think that there's a pond
and
of people.
And I think that works. And there's a vehicle that proves that.
Pray tell.
Maverick. Maverick is not bought by truck buyers. And we know that because when we did the towing test, we actually heard back from the Ford people and they say, we've run the data and these Maverick buyers are not towing at all. They are not truck buyers. And Ford flat out said, the PR manager was like, people who are buying Mavericks are not truck buyers. And they sell a heck of a lot of Mavericks. Because what Slate knows is that the bait that our friend Henry Ford and Walter P. Chrysler and Mr. Durant are using to get those truck buyers, that bait's not going to work on a non-truck buyer, but the fish are different, right? You need the right bait for the right fish.
I don't believe that, Tommy.
This really works well.
I'll tell you,
this is a good analogy.
I'll tell you why I don't believe that, all right? I'll tell you why I don't believe that. Because, you know, we had a Maverick.
Yes.
Yes, we had a Maverick. And you remember how you had your little sample of 10? Well, I had like 6 months of driving that thing around.
Uh-huh.
And every time I would pull up to somebody in a Maverick,
uh-huh,
I would just look over to them because I was curious who was driving it.
Yeah.
And not in one of those instances, Tommy,
yeah,
not one of those instances did I see a woman or what we would call a mommy blogger. Not in one.
Sure.
You figure if these are, you know, 50% of the car buyers are bought by women, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet I've never seen actually a woman, and I'm not saying they don't drive them, I'm not saying they don't love them, I believe there are a lot of women, but this is not a demographic that the Maverick, at least for my sample size, is going,
yeah,
to. I did see a lot of poop guy collectors in Maverick.
Sure.
I did see a lot of like pool guys.
Yeah.
I did see a lot
for
of
sure,
like Riley's, you know, but parts guys in Mavericks, but I did never saw like this mysterious of not,
but counterpoint,
you will see that in a Rivian.
Yeah, but counterpoint, I disagree completely because the women in my life, who include my wife and also Mary, the only vehicle we've ever owned that either of them cared about was the Maverick.
Yeah, but you didn't buy it from the company.
No, because I don't like the Maverick.
You didn't care enough to buy it.
Because I don't like it that much. But my wife.
And we specifically, one of the reasons we bought it was because you were like,
yes,
hey.
But it was too expensive and I just wasn't feeling it. I didn't like it that much. But that was me. Morgan loved the truck. She thought it was awesome. I just wasn't that excited about it. But like if Ford themselves are saying that truck people are not buying these trucks.
And let's face it, you're the managing editor of TFL Car.
Sure.
And you're not that huge of a truck
because
guy.
I thought it was boring. I had nothing to do with being a truck or not a truck. I just wasn't interested in the product.
It might be that.
No,
not. You're not that big of a truck guy. You're really not. Not that you don't
no,
like
I'm
trucks.
No, I'm not a truck guy.
You tow with, you know, our...
But
our,
I'm not a new car guy. That's the problem. I don't own a new car because they're too expensive. I went to Morgan and I said, for $36,000, we could have this Land Rover and $30,000 left over for repairs. That'll last us at least a month. And she bought on board with that. So the product wasn't interesting to me because it was new, not because it was a bad product. I just didn't see the value in spending $36,000 on a depreciating asset, even though it's arguable they don't depreciate very much. I think that if Ford themselves are saying truck people aren't buying these, no one's cross-shopping a Maverick with an F-150. I don't even think people are cross-shopping a Maverick with the Ranger. That product is bought by someone who's looking at a RAV4 or a Bronco.
Yeah, a guy who collects poop.
Yeah, for sure. O'Reilly's parts guy, he's 100% buying a Maverick, right?
And a lot of fleets.
Yeah, but I think that that is proof. But the key here is, and this is the big deal, the reason that that works for the Maverick is that it's a useful four-door family vehicle, mm-hmm. right? So if I'm not a truck person, I want a vehicle that works like a car but has a bed for the occasional adventure.
You know who wanted a...
Can I finish this point?
No.
And that works great with the Maverick. If I'm looking at a Slate... Then the conversation changes because a Slate doesn't work like my CRV. It doesn't have a back seat, right? It doesn't have a place to put more than two people comfortably. Then that conversation shifts back to, now I got to convince the hardcore truck guy to buy this weird rear-wheel drive 150-mile range thing, and I'm not sure they will.
I've only known, once again, I don't want to be sexist, but this is a small sample. I've only known one woman who has lusted after Maverick.
Mary loved the Maverick.
No.
No. Mary's dream car is a Maverick.
No, not Mary. Mary didn't love it. Maybe she loved it, but she didn't like lust after it. She didn't actually buy it. I know one woman who bought it.
Should we call her?
No, I don't call. Let me finish.
I guarantee she'll say it's a dream car.
Let me finish my story. Don't call her, please.
I'm not. I won't.
Okay. So, you know Motor Week?
Yes.
You know the gal at Motor Week?
Yes, Jessica Ray.
Jessica Ray bought a Maverick.
Yep.
And she bought it for two reasons. One, she wanted a truck, which is cool. And two, she wanted, I think, I should let her tell the story. I shouldn't tell her story. But I think she wanted like
She wanted the driver assistance package.
ADAS.
Yeah.
And for some reason, when they ordered it, the dealer screwed it up. Mm-hmm. But they didn't get it. So that's why she sold it. Mm-hmm. But she's the only woman I've known who's actually bought a Maverick. And this is a very tiny sample size. So I don't want to like make this sexist. And this is kind of the road it's going down. But there are vehicles, I think, that appeal to both men and women. I can give you a good example of that. A Wrangler. A Wrangler, I think, appeals to equally to both men and women. I just don't feel that the Maverick, or should I say that there is that pond of non-truck buying people. All right, and let's say that you're in that sunfish pond, and there are some trout swimming around in there.
Well, there's a lot.
There's some trout, right?
I mean, trout. Mr. Toyota swimming around there. Akio's in there. He's fishing.
No, there's some trout. But why wouldn't you go and fish in the frickin' truck pond? Why don't you go after truck buyers?
Well, I don't.
Why don't you go where the buyers are? Why don't you go?
Because their argument is that those truck buyers, they're not going to buy a small electric truck. Those guys, they're big into gas, they're big into four-wheel drive, they're big into large beds. They're already taken care of, right? That is a saturated market, right? Especially if you look at how competitive and cutthroat is. If I was trying to enter a new market, I'm not sure I'd want to go after those buyers.
This is turning into the truck podcast, by the way.
No, but it's interesting.
Sorry, Andre.
The truck podcast from the non-truck person. Yeah.
You're a truck guy. I shouldn't say you're not a truck
guy. No, I'm not really a truck guy. I've never owned a truck. I just like it. I'm an off-road guy, but I don't think I'm a truck guy. I don't need a truck for my life, so I don't own a truck.
But you just said something interesting. You said that market is saturated. But that market is saturated with the last 5-10 years very expensive trucks.
Sure.
And so if you come in with a price point truck, mm-hmm. be it electric or gas, I think you're going to do well in that pond. In other words, if your bait is the bait that people are expecting, which is an affordable truck at this point, however that translates, I think you're going to catch some trout. And yet none of these people are out there fishing for this. They're all out there.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. But the problem is you're not going to fish with them with a 150-mile electric truck. It's just not going to work.
Well, the problem with that is it's just not going to work, period.
Well, that is also the problem.
I mean, I'm going to say it right here, right now. The Slate's not going to sell.
I mean, I think
it's just not.
They're going to have a big initial first year like the Ineos, and I think they're going to sell a lot. And then year two, once those people have that product, I think it's going to be a tough sell. I really think if I was in their position, I would be doing everything to try to license a four-cylinder from Toyota or Nissan or someone and stick that in the truck because I think that product with a gas engine at $25,000 is very compelling. That product at $30,000 with an electric powertrain that will only go 150 miles and is rear-wheel drive, I'm not sure there's an audience.
I've just seen this story before. I know how this story ends, the plethora of electric truck companies that are now, you know, dead workhorse. You can go through them all.
Sure.
I could just see some like guy in Seattle, because I guess Amazon has this thing where you could float ideas up to, because it, obviously Slate is partially funded by Bezos, so you can float like these crazy ideas. And I can see somebody like, hey, you know what's not out there? A cheap electric truck that's very basic, and then they floated it. But it's some tech bro or bro-y gal or guy who doesn't understand and who did not take the time to understand who and why and where trucks are bought in America.
Sure.
And then they just had this idea, and because non-truck people, you know, greenlit it, doesn't mean that it's a good idea. And you're right. The first thing they should have thought of is, let's see how many dead, forget electric trucks, let's just talk about regular trucks there are that are two-door. Why isn't anybody selling a two-door truck?
I mean, there's other reasons why you also don't see two-door SUVs like the chicken tax, but they also just don't work, right? Fundamentally, you're selling a practical tool and then making it impractical for a lot of use cases, right? Especially in the two-door SUV.
Yeah, let's take you and me as example, all right? I'm an empty nester. You're here, but empty nester. And you're young... somewhat newly married man. So you go and, you know, if you were to go to, let's go to the website because you can't go to the Slate dealership. You go to the website and you and Morgan are looking at the Slate and you're like configuring it. And at some point at your age, you'll be like, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I'm saying, hey, maybe we'll want a kid.
Sure.
And the first question will be like, where do we put the kid?
Well, what Slate would say is that's when you convert your truck to the SUV.
And how safe is that going to be?
They say 5-star safety.
Has it been test crashed yet?
They said they've crash tested like 70 of them or whatever. Apparently, no, I'm not like...
IHHS?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Apparently.
It hasn't been crash tested by the Institute for Highway Safety because it doesn't exist.
Here's what I saw in the interview.
Uh-huh.
It does exist. They are crash testing them.
The company,
They give the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety.
Cole, can you look up to see
it? Not be published, but they work with them for sure. And what they said, which is more interesting, you'll appreciate this. They said when that vehicle is released, it will have IIHS top safety pick.
So I don't think it's been crash tested because, as far as I know, IIHS only buys. Tommy only buys trucks and vehicles that are in production. So as far as I am aware, and I appreciate you reading this, I'm not calling you a liar.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they are saying that. I don't have any.
IIHS.
Did you watch the Jay Leno interview? Who you were putting down earlier?
I'm not putting him down. I just said it's a weird place to sell an electric truck.
So here's what it says. Numerous Slate vehicles have undergone internal crash testing with early tests indicating the vehicles meeting or exceeding benchmarks for 5-star race safety ratings and IIHS top safety pick goals.
Goals.
I bet when that truck's out, it'll be IIHS top goals, safety pick.
We're journalists, and so let's be a little hard nosed here, Tommy, and let's not take the company's word for it.
I agree, but
Let's wait till, because I know IIHS, and I get that wrong, only buys vehicles and then they test them only if they're for sale and in production. They're not doing any manufacturer a favor by saying nudge nudge wink wink, we'll give you a 5-star rating even before we've ever.
What's the other one then that I'm thinking of? There's two crash test companies in the US.
Also Europe has another.
No, there's NCAP too, but there's another one in Europe. The reason I think that it will be IIHS safety rated is because the people that work there are not just some people they pulled off the street. Like a lot of the people are Tesla. We personally know the powertrain guy.
So you're going to convert your pickup truck. Sometimes I feel you like to argue for the sake of arguing.
No,
because I'm just a normal person, right? And I'm looking for a vehicle for my family, potentially my growing family.
Sure.
And I know your mom. And if I said to her, hey, guess what, honey, let's get this electric truck, and she'll be like, hey, when our Tommy is born, right?
Yes.
I'll be like, you know what? We'll convert it to she'd look at me and she'd be like,
crazy.
Why don't you just get the four-door now?
Yes, for sure. That's the problem. I agree with you completely. It's an impractical – this is why it's not going to sell, is because it's an impractical choice. My argument is it's not a safety thing, right? If they can get that safety stamp of approval – that, I think, leaves the conversation. But what doesn't leave the conversation is, what do we do with the kid? We've got our hands full. There's only two doors. We can't get him in the back seat. What do we do with that?
So let's go back to cars. Will the Highlander sell the electric Highlander? I think it'll actually sell. I'm going to be optimistic.
I said when you were gone, it all depends on the price point. I think if it's 55, I think there's a good chance it will sell. If it's 75, I think it's dead in the water.
I think it'll sell just because it's Toyota. People will give Toyota the benefit of the doubt.
Sure, to some extent, but like what? How much? How far will that go? Because I know like that article, they sold 12 or whatever, 20,000.
I want to say that when Honda rebranded the Blazer, they actually sold more.
Did you read the article on that, though, that came out last
week? No, I didn't read it.
Honda said they lost like $3 billion on that project.
But they still sold more than GM.
Sure.
Yeah. Because they were Honda.
There's no doubt that that brand will sell a certain number of vehicles. I'm just not convinced that it's going to be a long-term sales hit for Toyota, especially if it's too expensive.
Well, I also love that they're giving people a choice. You walk into the dealership and you don't want the electric one, there's the Grand Highlander.
Look, bZ4X sold, right? Let's say up until October they sold 12,000. That's a lot of vehicles for a small automaker. For Toyota, there's no one in Toyota saying that's a sales hit.
I'm just surprised they sold 12,000 because it was such a, like I say,
but that's to your point, how strong that brand is that 12,000 people out through October said, oh, we'll buy one of those or we'll lease one of those.
Hey, Cole, do we have any more comments that we can answer? Is there any? No. That's fine. We'll keep going then, Tommy. So tell me about the Mazda. Did you like it as much as you can before the embargo? Because you did a video comparing it to, I believe, three other midsize.
There you go. Tad P, the root of all evil in the auto world is descended from Tesla. There you go. There is a, maybe not total truth in that, but there is some truth that like a lot of the things we hate about new cars, no volume controls, big touchscreens, the vents that are controlled by the computer, that all did come from Tesla.
The big screen that's stuck in the middle of the dashboard?
That all came from Tesla. Yeah,
there's probably another 15 things.
The door handles, electronic door handles.
I can't think of right now.
Right, that was another one.
Getting rid of like, and actually you just mentioned INEOS, getting rid of the speedometer and the tachometer, right? They don't have those in front of you.
Yeah,
right?
That was a Tesla thing,
Tesla thing, putting in the middle. I think Mini did it first, but still, you know, Tesla.
But they didn't put it in a screen. They had a separate dial, right?
Yeah.
So the Mazda is interesting. So the new CX-5, what they did is they kind of, in a lot of ways, they listened to what their customers were saying. And the CX-5 in the previous generation was pretty small. So they grew it 4.5 inches in length. The trunk space is up big from 29 to almost 34 cubic feet worth of space. It's got that monster screen on the inside, which we talked about. It's got a lot more rear seat legroom. The rear seat, I think, is one of the best in the class. Same with the headroom is excellent, excellent, excellent. But the thing that people are really upset about, the comments I've read just don't like the tablet in the dash. And then people are also bummed out that they got rid of the turbo. So for 25, you could get this pretty neat four-cylinder turbo setup. Now it's only the naturally aspirated inline four that's been around for 15 years now. So I think in some ways it's a step forward, and in other ways it's maybe
I kind of feel like the manufacturers can't win. You know, when they add a turbo, people hate it because of reliability and
can't win, and then when people complain about the knobs, they get rid of all the knobs, and then people complain about them getting rid of all the knobs.
Yeah, I feel like it goes, you know.
Yes, it is a tough place to be a product planner. Yeah, that's for sure. But
Hitting it just right is not easy.
Very tough. I agree. Yeah, it's a tough thing to balance as an automaker. I'm not sure that they got everything right on this Mazda. You know, we'll have driving impressions next week.
You know, somebody said something smart, and I think it's true, in the comments in your video. If you want to see that video, head over to AllTFL, or if you want to see the Highlander EV, see the same place, AllTFL. Mm-hmm. They said the reason they wouldn't buy a Mazda is because they don't have enough dealers, and that's always been kind of the biggest issue that Mazda has had. It's a small company with a small dealer network. And I think if you live in a place where there is no dealer, and it's easy to live in a place where there is no dealer 500 miles away from you, then the chances of you buying a Mazda are pretty slim.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly on the money.
So maybe Mazda should think about that if they want to grow their business more than necessarily whether it's got a turbo or not. That would just be my thought.
Well, so they're working on a hybrid system, an in-house hybrid system, which is supposed to come out in 27. In my opinion, the car should have launched with that, because that would have been something they needed, especially because RAV4 has gone all hybrid. There's Tucson hybrid. There's CR-V hybrid that are all really big sellers. There's the Rogue plug-in hybrid now, if you want to go down that route. You see the pricing on that?
No. Too much?
The new Rogue plug-in hybrid, which is the rebadged Mitsubishi, for some reason
Eclipse Cross?
No, normal Outlander.
Okay.
It's $5,000 more than the Mitsubishi, and it's a worse car because it's the old pre-facelift one. What are they doing over there? I know, it's crazy.
So here's something interesting, Tommy. And I'm just like, I'm kind of two minds on this, all right? Let me take a step back and tell you what I mean. So we started this show podcast by saying that Toyota has already announced that they're going to take $5,000 and put it on the hood of the next EV that you buy.
Sure.
Or give you 0% financing.
And that's three is the CHR, the BZ, and the BZ Woodland. Is that the three they're talking about?
Yes, the three. Okay. Yeah. The ones that are going to be are either available or will be very soon at the dealership. So that's, I mean, that's a significant chunk of money.
Right.
Because these cars are, you know, in the $40,000 range, give or take.
Well, it's a significant chunk of money considering they're not really on sale yet.
The BZ's already on sale.
Yeah, but the CHR's not. So they're already discounting car that they haven't put on sale.
What's 5,000 to 40,000? What percentage is that?
That's 12%.
Something like that. So they're already offering a 12% discount, which is huge, right? Or whatever that is. Like, yeah. I'm not good at math. It's a big percentage.
Yeah.
Okay, very good, Tommy.
That was close.
So when we went to pick up that Land Cruiser, we picked it up from my friend's mother-in-law.
Yep.
And I said, hey, by the way, because we're doing the series where we've got this Model Y, we drove here without ever touching the steering wheel. I told her that. Remember that?
Yep.
And she looked at the Model Y and she said, I would never buy an electric car.
Yeah. That's the headwind they're fighting against.
Yeah. That's the headwind.
That's why there's $5,000 on the hood.
You've got these two things. Like everybody's complaining. Not everybody, but a lot of people are complaining, and rightfully so. The car prices have gotten too crazy.
Yep.
And yet, when Toyota offers $5,000 on the hood, they would never even consider it because it's electric. As if somehow that car isn't worthy or isn't, you know what I mean? Those two things don't live in my head, because if we were living during the EV1 20 years ago and electric cars were truly like, you know, crappy and had no range and you couldn't, even 10 years ago, and you couldn't charge them and you couldn't like cross-country them, but the charging network has rapidly been built out. Electric cars have a lot of advantages over internal combustion. A lot of disadvantages too, but there's a lot of advantages. First of all, they're cheaper to maintain. They're quiet. They're faster, quicker, right?
Sure.
Right? There's no necessary maintenance. On the downside, you know, they burn through tires quicker. You do have range anxiety. You know, you need a charger at your home potentially to make them, you know, usable in an everyday. But on the other side, if you have a charger in your home, then your home becomes its own gas station. So there's a lot of pluses. And yet, people would never even consider that car in that same conversation just because it's, I'm doing air quotes here, electric. And that's a shame, because for some reason, cars have become political. And as a person who loves all cars, I don't care what they're powered by, coal, steam, electricity, internal combustion, diesel. I just love cars. I don't understand why it has become so politicized and so like crazy that it's somehow people have internalized, you know, I'm a you know, Hemi guy, or, you know, I would never touch it. I don't understand that.
But there's other things that you need to take into account, right? There's other valid concerns for not buying an EV. So like we need to replace our 500E here soon, because the lease is going to be up.
Yeah, but you paid zero for that.
Yeah. But I'm saying we still need to replace it, right?
Yeah.
So I've been looking, poking around, because we want to stay EV, because for our lifestyle, we have a place to charge. All the things you said have proven to be true.
You have three chargers at the ranch.
We've got three chargers at the ranch, so we could charge three different ports. No. But I was considering, Morgan likes Toyotas.
Uh-huh.
So I was looking into like CHRs and stuff. And then I was looking into that $5,000 thing. I'm like, ooh, things are looking good. But then I was curious to see what like BZ4Xs are doing in the used market. And by buying that car, there's not a for sure guarantee, but a high probability that you would be bleeding money in 3 years.
Yeah, I agree.
And that is a major factor.
So lease it or buy a used one.
Yeah, well, that's the solution. I mean, we're looking at...
That's why we leased the Model Y.
Yeah, but we're looking at like I was looking at a 2 or 3 year old Aria with 30,000 miles, 20,000 miles.
Yeah, how much are those?
Those cars were $45,000, $50,000 new.
Yeah.
What do you think that's worth now?
25.
19.
Yeah.
Right? So if you had bought that for 45 grand...
I'm saying...
But that's why they're not interested. That's another reason I'm not interested.
There's another reason. I agree. It's true, but there's another reason you want to lease it. And that's because the technology is improving so much that you're probably buying old technology if you actually go out
and
buy it.
But leasing is also problematic. I mean, a lot of the times it's
so buy a used
it's
one.
A bad
buy
financial.
Buy that $19,000 Aria.
Yeah, I will. You don't have to tell me that. But I'm saying, as that lady who bought the Land Cruiser, these could be other factors that are preventing her from being excited about it.
I don't think her issue was the value. I just think that because some people have grown up with internal combustion being the thing that they associate with cars. I mean, the true meaning of conservative is that you don't like change. the non-political meeting. You know, change is something that is not good and is bad. And I think a lot of people fall into that category where, like I have always been, I think, and that's why it's so hard for me to understand, because I've always been an early adopter. So for me, change is exciting. That's why we're doing this series about self-driving. But like I was talking to a lot of my journalist friends and I was telling them, hey, we just went 2,000 miles without touching the steering wheel on the Tesla. And they looked at me like, wow, that sucks.
Yeah.
And I get that.
Yeah. I mean, I think in her instance too, Dad, you also have to look at her use case, right? They live quite remote.
Yeah.
You know, they're
Caribbean.
No, but I'm saying like they also live in a place that gets historically huge amounts of snow, right? They're in the mountains.
Caribbean.
Yeah, but maybe they don't. Maybe they have power outages, right? They can't regularly charge the car, right? They're remote enough where that could be concern.
I mean, that goes. So if you're out of gas and you can't get to the gas station because
you have a gas
in,
canister and then you put
in.
More gas in the car. Right, there's no electric canister unless you get a power wall
or
solar,
or
and that
or it could
kind
be
of
the other way. You could then use the electric car to power your house once the electric lines go down because of the snowstorm. I mean, that cuts both ways too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's valid arguments in both camps. I think it's amazing technology.
Let me cut to the chase. Do you think that electric cars will replace internal combustion? Let's start with in China.
Yes.
Europe.
Yes.
America.
No.
Okay.
That's where I'm at. At least not in probably the next 50 years.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, guys. Should we call it here?
Yeah, I think so. Cole, any other comments before anything else we can answer before we wrap it up?
This is what happens when you do a podcast on Thursday at 3
I know.
We've both
been traveling.
It's not great.
And so if you guys are interested in that Land Cruiser that we bought, we're going to do a Land Cruiser series with it. We're super excited. We have owned an 80 series and we've owned a 200. We have never owned a 100.
Yep.
We're going to have some fun with that. I think the goal is there to build it up, a cheap off-roader, a budget off-roader, shall I say. So if you're wondering what we're going to be doing with that, that's what's coming with that.
I think build it up is a stretch. Are we just putting tires on it?
No, we'll do more than that. We'll build it up.
Tires and wheels.
No.
You heard it here first. This is built.
We'll do more. Should I spill the beans? Yeah, I'll spill the beans. We want to buy also a new one. And then the theory is, we'll take the new one and the old one and we'll take them off road and we'll see how they do in stock form because both will be stock. And then the goal will be, can we build out the old one to match the new one?
All right, let's find out.
So that means that'll lift, means bigger tires. It means, you know, because the problem is the new one does have a rear locker and it does have a disconnectable sway bar, which the old one doesn't have.
Yeah.
Do you know if it's
I don't think ours does have a disconnectable sway bar.
Yeah, it does.
Not the blue one that you're thinking about buying.
Well, that'll be easier for the old one.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right. Yeah. Anyway, so that is the plan. So, and then we're going to try to do a little bit of overlanding with it, which I think will be really
fun.
Yeah,
that'll be cool.
Yeah. And then what else is coming up? We should talk about, you're going to go drive the new Cherokee, I believe.
Nope. Case is going to drive the new Cherokee.
Case is going to go to the new Cherokee.
And we've got a Toyota thing we're doing where we're going to go drive.
We're going to surf and ski on the same day.
Yeah, so it'll be kind of interesting.
That's why I picked up the phone, because you just called me. They asked me what vehicle I wanted, and I said 4Runner. So we'll start with the 4Runner.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, so that'll be fun. Yeah. So yeah, be sure to stay tuned. We've got a lot going on. Head over to altfl.com. We've got more stuff for you coming soon.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next time. Ciao.